Happy season two.
Happy season two, Lucinda. What accomplishments. Absolutely love it.
Did you think we'd make it to season two or to episode 30-something?
Yeah. Why not? We're champions.
Yeah. Very seldom do I start something and don't see it through like a solid year or two.
Exactly. And we have an incredible lineup of people that we still want to talk to. And just think, like, all of the stories that we've already heard that are just gracing the surface. They have then built maybe something entirely new by the time we talk to them again. It's so exciting. Yeah. But do I have a bone to pick.
With me?
No. With this particular institution. Okay.
Okay.
We have been trying to manifest opening ceremony tickets to the Calder Gardens. And guess what I got? An email from Calder Gardens saying, celebrate Calder Gardens grand opening with us.
What?
I opened that email so fast. I was like, yes, this is the moment. We finally made it. We're going behind the velvet rope. We are going to opening day. There's a but.
What's the but?
Because this is not opening day. This is a parade to Calder Gardens the day before opening day, which you don't even end up inside. Chaos and Kisses, grand opening parade for Calder Gardens. I highly recommend everybody go. It's going to be Saturday, September 20th, noon to 2 at Love Park, with a concert starting at 1 o'clock.
Huh.
Absolutely love it. You know, created by an artist. Free and open to all. While supplies last, parade goers will receive a voucher for free admissions to come back and visit. And their opening day is supposed to be September 21st, the next day. I thought this was like, whip out that tuxedo, get that gala, look ready. You're going to Calder Gardens opening. But instead, no. It's still behind the curtain, Lucinda.
Robert, are you okay?
No, I'm not. Why have we not received an invitation yet? I might be booked.
He's booked and busy, boys.
Sorry, I just had to get it off my chest.
I understand. I've had a lot of frustration lately as well. That's neither here nor there.
Bringing us back, First Friday's Old City. I mean, it never ceases to amaze how many people you get out on First Friday in Old City to just celebrate artists and the artwork. I mean, stopped into Jane Gallery, who was celebrating their 1-year anniversary.
It was packed.
It was a party. We ran into Dominique, who had amazing artwork on the wall. Highly recommend everybody go see that at Jane Gallery.
We went down to Paradigm, but unfortunately, I got a late start due to a back-to-school yoga workshop that I took my oldest to. Oh, and yes, I am aware of how annoying that sounds.
It's understandable. It's that private school life.
We're practicing mindfulness in our house.
We tried to hit Paradigm, but they were already closed. Yep.
But we were able to get to Two Street Club, which I think is the sleeper institution of Old City. People don't know it's there still.
You would be amazed from what they were able to do. They were also celebrating, or at least expanding on what First Fridays are for them, by including like a secret garden in the back, which had a bartender. There's a downstairs speakeasy that is not to
be my favorite.
It was so cool with another bartender down there mixing cocktails, having drinks, while upstairs they had partnered not only with two artists for this month that can be seen at their gallery, but they also partnered with the super fun girls that were making those like Eagles bags that are the right shape and size to like bring into the game.
That was genius.
Oh, yeah. Because everything's got to be like clear and you have to have it a certain size, but like you still want to like root for your team. You could do it with these bags. So, mm-hmm. I mean, check out Two Street. Check out their Instagram as well.
Up in the show notes.
Absolutely amazing. Let's move on to the conversation.
On to the conversation.
This is Robert Marsh, and you're listening to Philly Has Heart podcast. In this podcast, we sit down with artists, gallerists, educators, curators, and other creatives who comprise the Philadelphia art world to discuss upcoming performances, exhibits, and other events and initiatives that are not to be missed. The art scene in Philadelphia is so rich that it can seem daunting. Consider this your weekend cultural recommendation. With me always is my producer, Lucinda Deggerland.
Hello, hello.
And today we have Katie Van Vliet and Lisa Imperial from BYO Print. Welcome, ladies.
Thanks for having us.
Hello. Hi.
So, as always, we wanted to kind of dive into what brought you to BYO Print to begin with, or what brought you to the city itself. Should your origin have started outside of Philadelphia? Lisa, do you want to start?
Sure. I came to Philadelphia to go to college a long time ago, and I went to Moore College of Art and Design, where I actually met Katie, and we were in printmaking courses together. So how I got to BYO Print, I was 2 years behind Katie, and the daunting fact of losing my printmaking studio space at Moore had me worried, so I was extra friendly to the art shop girl I knew who graduated, and Katie kind of let me know that she was going to buy a press. Wow. And I was like, oh. Yes, if you buy a press, I will print on that press.
and be my best friend.
And also be your best friend.
Perfect.
As you know, Katie was a little bit ahead of me. I graduated, and she had some studio space. It kind of started out like that.
Lisa's right, like the daunting aspect of like losing the facilities that you have in a university or in a college is so huge, because as artists and art students, like we have all of these state-of-the-art facilities available to us and we become experts in our craft, well, as much as you can be as a 21-year-old. Right. And then you finish and you lose that access. And so one of the things I thought was very, very clever was I took a job at Moore College of Art basically the day after I graduated to run their gallery store called the Art Shop. And I thought that as a staff member, that would mean that I could go use the print shop.
Yeah.
Of course.
And it did not.
Oh, no.
It did not. Which is fine. Yeah. It's not a huge print shop. It's important that the students have primary access. But what it did mean was that I had a full-time job in 2007. And then by 2008, I had bought a house like basically a month before the recession, and with a full-time job and like a little bit of comfort and a place to call my own, I decided I would make a facility for people like me. So another classmate of mine, Lauren Fisher, and I got together and we decided to open a print shop together.
Wow.
So I bought this little etching press, and it was a new press. It was the largest small professional press I could afford at the time. And I put it in my living room. Yes. And that was like the beginnings of the idea. Eventually, Lauren and I joined 6 other classmates of ours from Moore. And we rented a really big warehouse space up in Port Richmond. At the time, I think it was Amber Street Studios or maybe Richmond Mills. But it's called The Loom now.
And yeah.
So we were there for about a year, and about 3/4 of the way through, Lauren and I were pretty certain that we wanted to open this community space. And the other artists that were there weren't as interested, and so we broke off, and they kept the space, and we moved into a motorcycle shop.
Yes!
off of Frankfurt Avenue.
Back in the day, Frankfurt Avenue was called the Arts Corridor.
Yes.
Really?
The Frankfurt Arts Corridor.
Yeah. So we were like in the thick of where
this was 2009. So we moved in to a loft above a motorcycle shop, which was really great. My dad was a motorcycle rider and repair person, so it felt, you know, very homey to me.
100%.
It felt really punk rock to me.
It was very punk rock. I didn't realize it at the time, but it was very punk rock.
Printing on leather now?
You can. Anyway, so it was just me and Lauren and Lisa kind of chasing our skirt tails, you know?
I was there. You know, I did print once at the loom.
Yes, you printed once at the loom.
Because I was persistent.
And another former classmate had printed in my living room, and we had some parties. Like, it was just a big space with a 15-inch etching press in the middle of it.
Wow.
When we were at the loom.
The first thing I printed was a Christmas card for my family members. It was really bad. But I was, like, determined. I was like, you know what? You just have to keep printing. You just have to figure out how to keep doing it, or else you won't.
It's going
to
go away, your skills. They need to be honed just like anything else.
Wow.
Anyway, in the motorcycle shop, Lauren and I kind of set it up that we would have a little personal space on one side and the print shop would be on the other side. And this was within 500 square feet. So pretty small. We put an ad out on Craigslist to get new members.
Yes.
And got two members aside from Lisa. And that was Ted and Chad, and they had belief in our dream, I guess.
Nice, and not serial killers.
Ted is still a member, so great. Ted is one of my co-directors.
We love Ted.
Yeah,
Ted is awesome. Lisa, Ted, and I are on the board of directors with Lauren and another member, Jen, and we all steer the ship. Chad stayed a member for a long, long, long time.
Yeah,
and he was so great, and you know, can't say anything. Anything but good things about Chad. Anyway, they had support of the idea. So we were there for a little under a year and then moved the whole shop back into my row house. Yes. Full disclosure, there were a lot of like crazy personal incidents in between, including like bad construction and waiting games and stuff. But I moved in with my partner, with my husband. And so we moved the shop into the house as kind of a temporary space while we looked for a better space in an art studio building.
It was a great space.
It was. Loved it. Yeah, we had three etching presses in the living room and popped some plumbing down to make a sink. And when I sold that house, I advertised it as ready for a wet bar.
That's perfect. Yes.
The second floor was a silk screen, and we washed screens out in the bathtub, and I built an exposure unit in the linen closet.
Wow.
And blew a wall out, so it was like an open floor plan.
Nice.
And then again,
here's something not everyone knows: Katie is really handy.
It seems like
really, really handy.
Yeah. The third floor was still my studio and Lauren's studio. We were just an artist collective at that time, and this was in Kensington and just on the outskirts of Fishtown. Probably wasn't the best thing to have in a row house, but it was fine for a
short time. Now that we're older, we realize that we were one insurance claim like away from being
destitute.
Yeah. But hey, we made it.
Yeah,
you did.
And Lauren and I, you know, we didn't make the print shop a nonprofit until a couple of years ago. So we were really running as an artist collective until then. And we got some advice from a lawyer early on that we weren't really moving enough money to bother becoming a nonprofit or becoming an entity at all, which in hindsight, again, is like really bad advice.
Yeah.
The first thing we did was LLC up.
That said, like the idea of like collaboration between artists is part of our core mission, and like how we are all in this together is it's a big part of what the print shop is about. And so
I mean, it's still
like,
very
assuming
much
trust is there.
Still just very much run by the members.
Right.
Like, yes.
If you want something to happen in the studio, you talk about it, you make it happen.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
And at what point did you move to your current location? Was it after the second stint in the house?
No, we spent 12 years at our space in Sharktown Studios at Masher and Cecil B. Moore.
That's an interesting story because I feel like that was our first really big leap.
It was a huge leap to move in there.
Because we had at that point a kind of core group of like 10 members, right?
Yes, it was 10 members. We each paid $90 a month
and split
the rent.
And to move to this new space that was an actual artist space in an artist building, like, was going to increase our rent pretty drastically. And like, we needed everyone on board to make it work. And I remember us walking over to the space and looking at it. And, you know, we're such a collaborative group that it was kind of like, are we all in? And we all kind of had that moment of like, yeah, let's do it.
And everybody being all in was like really important. So when we decided to move into Paradigm, that was another big moment for us where we all had to be in because it changed a lot of things. Like, we knew that if we were going to move into Paradigm Arts Building at 12 North 3rd, where we are right now, we would have to become an entity and that we would have to agree to a lot of new things and try to seek out outside funding to make it work. So that's when we decided to apply for nonprofit. And we did have everybody on board. And by that time, we were at 18 members. And getting 18 people to agree on anything is so hard. So hard.
It took a couple
It took a long time.
Calls
and, yeah.
How many people do you have now?
22 or 23.
Yeah, we think we're
Is this a happy place?
25 is our capacity. And we have two people that are approved to be members, but they're just kind of waiting for a couple things in their own practice to suss out before they start with us.
Wow. That's an incredible journey to get to where you are today.
Yeah, I know.
And
time flies.
Yes. And to still have friendship through that. Is incredible as well.
Yes. Well, I am kind of a hard ass. So, like, it's really important to me that I can wear different hats and compartmentalize so that, like, my friendships are really intense when they're also shared in this workspace. So, like, all my favorite people are at BYO Print. But if you fuck up,
find out.
I know. Fuck up and find out. No.
She's a softie.
I am very. Yeah. I try to be really accommodating because I know that, especially for artists, we're all just trying to make our lives work, you know, without giving up things that are important to us.
Yeah.
And everybody's journey is different, so if you have something going on in your life and that affects your membership, I never want the print shop to become a hardship for someone. So we always just have a conversation. And I hope that anybody that's ever printed at the print shop knows that they're always welcome to come back. You know?
We have kind of an alumna.
Alumni.
Habit going to an all-women's college. We have alumni that show up every now and then.
Oh, that's amazing.
And we love that.
On our Instagram, we mostly just, like, share what our members are doing. And so every now and then I'll see something that an alum from the shop is up to, and I'll be like, yes, I'm going to flaunt that really hard.
Yes. They're thriving. They're doing well.
To scoot really back, Lucinda, we moved into our current space in Old City in November. Last year, so just under a year
coming up to that anniversary.
There's not a freight elevator in that.
There is a freight elevator. There was no freight elevator at Sharktown. And I will never do that to us again.
What level were you at?
We were on the third floor at Sharktown. That was a trial for sure, but like Lisa said, when we moved in there, we had a lot less stuff, and so we brought things in slowly, and getting everything off of the third floor was definitely like a planning project that took a whole year to kind of figure out all the logistics.
It is a long process to move us. Right. And thankfully, the building took a while to get ready for us to be there.
Okay.
And so it actually was, I think, a good thing.
It was a good thing.
We had to pause and be like, oh, wait, how are we actually going to do this? It turns out we had to raise a whole bunch of money to hire movers because it was like, we can't actually do this by ourselves.
Can't do this ourselves.
I mean, we can't carry presses.
Right. We're not 25 anymore.
Right. Yes. That's true.
Also, my husband, who moved us before, said no.
Never
also
again.
Mine too.
Mine they learned.
Gets injured. My husband gets injured when he helps me.
So we're not allowed
But anyway, it's all a strategic plan that's up in my brain. So like we became a nonprofit so that we could apply for grants, do fundraising, raise the funds to move, and then raise more funds to sustain us ongoing.
Absolutely.
At a bare bones budget, because, you know, I have all of this.
I mean, it's volunteer. It's astounding when you think, like, you know, 10 years ago we'd have a fundraiser for like $500. We need $500, right, guys. And how much did we end up raising for our move? It's like $20,000.
We needed $20,000 to move. We raised a little bit more than that so that we would have the seed money for the full year.
Oh, that's incredible.
I was blown away. And a big part of that is Katie's strategic planning of how we were going to roll this out and how we were going to, you know, partner with Paradigm. And when I think of that, I'm just really blown away that we've come so far.
Yeah.
And it's really a lot of Katie's leadership. Ooh. It really is. I'm going to just dote on her for a minute. She's our fearless leader.
Can you share with the listeners what printmaking is?
Yes.
Explain it to us like we are 5 years old.
Yeah.
My five-year-olds love printmaking.
Excellent. That's good.
Printmaking is an avenue of visual arts that is focused on making multiples and typically like works on paper. And where the confusion lies in the 20th century is that we're in the art, you know, this is art in the age of digital reproduction. You can hear the word colloquially, the print, and it's a copy or a digital archival print of a painting or of a drawing or something. Mm-hmm. And then you hear the word this print, and it's a silkscreen or a woodcut or a lithograph or an etching. And those four and a bunch of others are fine art prints. And those are things that exist only as they're multiple. And when you're making a print, you're making an impression of a matrix, and something is being offset from the matrix onto another substrate. So to make a piece of art, I know that's techie and nerdy sounding. So like Lisa makes woodcuts. So she carves an image into a piece of wood and rolls ink onto the surface of the wood.
Okay.
And using the equipment at our print shop, takes an impression of that onto a piece of paper in addition to multiples.
I like to think about it. It's graphic design before computers. So you have to think like we've had imagery, illustrations. Right. We've had, published books before there were computers, right?
Yeah.
And so when you think of it, it was that technology that kind of spawned printmaking, right?
Wow.
To be able to reproduce text or images and share them. And so I often just tell people when you think of like Ben Franklin with the letterpress, like,
he's a printmaker too.
He's a printmaker.
Correct.
We have kind of taken these older graphic technologies, and they've always been used for fine art, but like I think contemporary fine art is pushing the limits of what these techniques can do.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of times something that was used professionally to make multiples for communication or whatever, once that tech becomes obsolete, then the artists get a hold of it and we get all sorts of weird stuff.
Then you get to play with it.
I make etchings, and those are like etched with acid or engraved copper plates that the image is printed from. And the technology really hasn't changed since the Renaissance.
Wow.
So I love that my like media is kind of apocalypse proof in that way.
Yeah, wait, hold on. I want more info on how, from both of you, for both of your media. If you wanted to start with like what type of wood you using, and then what are you using to either carve or create that etch?
So you can use a lot of different wood materials. My favorite is called a Sheena plywood.
Okay.
So it's a plywood with a veneer on it to give you that really nice grain.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it kind of easier to carve because you really just have to get through a veneer.
Gotcha.
So I use Sheena plywood, and I use very sharp gouges. So if you think of like woodworking tools, you've seen people with like the hammer and the gouge. Those are kind of big. These are hand gouges. So you're really just like using the palm of your hand as the pressure to move the gouge through the wood. I have different sizes and shapes of those gouges that can help me produce different line qualities. And I typically work in a process that's called reductive printmaking, which is when I use one block, but I print it in several layers to create a multicolored image.
Okay.
And so what you do is you start with carving everything that you want to be the color of the paper. So white, essentially.
And you're starting with an image.
Yeah. I typically have a drawing that I've worked on that I either transfer to the block, which is a whole nother process.
Yeah.
Or I draw directly on the block.
Okay. But,
you have to also remember it will be a mirrored image because you're... that's something. I don't like drawing on the block because then it will be the opposite when I print it.
Oh, I have a comment about that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Later.
But yeah, you carve everything you want to stay white, print your first color,
okay.
Then carve away you want everything to stay that color, print, carve away more, and print. It's how you get multiple colors in a print with one block. And it also destroys the block as you go. So you have to imagine, you have to decide, I want to make 20 of these.
Right.
So you have to print like 25 because you're going to mess up a couple. Right.
And it truly is limited and it can never be copied. Can never be reproduced that way.
That's kind of why I love it. But also it's cheaper because Sheena plywood is a little pricey.
Gotcha. Nice.
But that's one way that I make my images.
Okay.
Katie's process is a bit more involved.
Well, I have a sculpture practice and a printmaking practice. Ooh. And I went to school for sculpture at Moore. And I think that is like a base one. It helped me learn how to make a print shop because of the building and like seeing things in space. Found objects are kind of the core of everything that I do. So even though I'm making like etchings that are printed very traditionally on paper, in the end, starting with like found things is what I like to do best. So I forage and collect.
Nice.
I like push those things through the press with my copper and take impressions of those objects into the copper and etch those as like kind of my jumping off point. And so unlike Lisa, I almost never start with a drawing ahead of time. I always am kind of like doing a thing, seeing what it does and making a response to that. And so I call and respond on my etching plates. To back up a bit, like the basic process of making an etching is taking a piece of 18 gauge or 16 gauge copper, if you have a lot of extra money, 16 gauge, because it's very expensive. So you take a piece of flat copper, and the idea is that you're protecting parts of the copper and exposing parts of the copper to acid. And the acid that we use at BYO Print and in my practice is called ferric chloride, and it's technically a corrosive salt solution. It's not really an acid, so it's considered the like safer etchant. You coat the copper with waxy stuff called ground. I'm not going to really go into all of it. It's a lot. But anyway, you coat the plate with ground, and then you can typically, you would draw into the ground.
That removes it.
That removes it. Yes. Wow. So it's use a needle and it drags through the ground and exposes the copper where you made that mark. And the idea is you put it in the acid, and depending on how long you leave it in there, it etches the line so deep. Mm-hmm. Longer it's in there, the deeper the line, the more ink it'll hold, the darker the line will be in the image. Wow. So using that as your basis, you can manipulate that in all sorts of ways. To make shallow lines, to make gradations. There's a process that uses spray paint or airbrushing to make tone. What I was describing before with the found objects is a process called soft ground etching, where you're pressing found objects into the wax and etching a direct impression of those objects. And then there's the erasing part of the copper, which people don't always accept that you can erase it. Because you have to correct mistakes on the copper plate.
Okay.
So you scrape it off or you smush it down. Mm-hmm. And it's that physicality of the copper that drew me to etching,
mm-hmm.
because it felt like sculpture. I love making a copper plate, and I don't always addition them because that's a whole other part that it takes just forever. Like right now, I have, I think, 12 to 15 etchings that are ready to be additioned that I show that I had in a show at Fleischer this summer that I don't know when they'll be additioned, eventually.
Wait, so these are plates that you still have?
Yeah.
That you haven't printed yet, or you did?
I've printed the printing one. Already? Okay. I've printed one final.
Gotcha.
So when you're making etchings, it's an additive thing. So you're making a mark. And then you print it.
Gotcha.
And then you make new marks and you etch those and then you print that. And so you build up your image over time. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like making a drawing or making a painting where you're starting with an underdrawing and you're adding layers and layers to get more and more richness to the image. And so I'll work on multiple pieces at once for maybe 6 or 8 months. And in the end, I have a suite of different images that all are related to each other, even if they're not about the same thing, because right. they were all worked on at the same time using the same materials and the same imagery and yada yada.
Do you consider your copper etchings a piece of art as well?
Oh, yes. Yes. And they make it into the sculpture work.
Okay.
Yeah. So as a sculptor, one of the pieces of advice that our mentor, Moore Shelley, it wasn't really a piece of advice, but a comment she made once. And she said that your plates look better than your prints. And I love her. No. We love her so much. I love her for that comment because it sat with me. It was like, okay, I know my plates look really cool. Like, how do I make the prints that come off of them look equally as good?
Right.
And mm-hmm. so that's always been a drive for me to master this process as a sculptor. Mm-hmm. So I'm making something that looks cool by itself, and then the impression of that thing is equally as interesting.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, and because I don't make a drawing ahead of time, I'm always surprised by the print because it's in reverse. And so I never know exactly what it's going to look like until after so I've true. Made that proof, is what it's called, a proof of the plate.
And for both of you, do you use the same type of paper when you do print?
Sometimes I think we do, but
not all the time.
Not all the time.
And you've kind of tried and true, right? Do you use the same couple papers?
Yeah, I was Reeves BFK for a very, very long time, but I'm starting to expand
Insider look. Yeah. There's a whole universe in printmaking, especially about paper. So Reeves BFK is an example of a cotton rag paper, and a cotton-based paper is kind of the tried and true, like heavy fine art paper that you'll see. I tend to print on Japanese papers. My favorite is this paper called Kitakata, and it's made of gompi primarily, which is the plant fiber. I know it's super nerdy.
Okay.
And it's a little green. Yes. And
I love it though.
It's so beautiful.
Yes.
But it's really thin. And so if you're printing an edition on that paper, a lot of printmakers will mount it to a piece of cotton rag at the end. And I'm kind of having an internal battle of like whether I can leave an edition of prints on that paper by itself right now versus mounting it to another paper, or versus doing another process called shinclay to mount it during the printing process. I know your eyes and your face is...
No, this is great. Someone is nerding out on this with you.
Oh,
all right?
Yes, I hope so.
Yes.
So I just had this solo show at Fleischer Art Memorial through their program called the Wind Challenge. And I made all these huge paper sculptures there. And they're all etchings printed on this gompy paper, Kitakata, and then glued back together in these crazy shapes, and then beeswaxed. So I'm trying to kind of break the rectangle, like break out of that rectangle that is like the etching in the frame on the wall.
Wow.
As much as I can.
Oh, so. I love this. I love both of your arts. This is incredible. No, and how about for your wood etchings? Do you find the same art in the wood?
Well, you wouldn't call them etchings.
Right. They're relief prints. It's kind of interesting. The process of I'm making sketches on paper, transferring them to the wood, and carving kind of gives me some space to really further develop my imagery kind of in a different way. And so I start with a sketch and I have an idea of some shapes and textures and forms that I'm trying to create. But I find that my ideas change a lot in the process as I'm like carving away and printing and seeing what happens, like between layers. So yeah, I think the process of printmaking and all the steps that it takes and the time in between those steps really help me push my image creation in a surprising way. And it is kind of this magic moment when you're, you know, you put it through the press and you lift the paper up to see what happened.
Right.
It is this moment of kind of giddy surprise. Because yeah, there is kind of a surprise element to, well, did it work? Did I carve enough? Are the colors layering the way I thought they would? Is the texture of the wood coming through? And there's ways to, you know, manipulate that. And so I've just spent the last decade making pretty much all woodcut prints. I've dabbled a little bit elsewhere, but I always come back to these relief prints. And there is something that's like so beautiful about, it's a handmade image, but the wood doesn't look like your hand. It doesn't look like a drawing. It's kind of hard to describe. The impression of the wood on the paper with the ink is, it, you can't create it any other way.
Oh, I love this. I love this. I know. I'm so excited.
I know, and you should definitely come see some of these things.
So, where can our audience find you, both in real life and online?
Well, the print shop is in Old City at 12 North 3rd on the 5th floor. Okay, so right now the elevator that we spoke of is broken.
Oh, no.
So if you want to venture up there, the best times to do that, the first is during First Fridays. We typically have the shop open from 5 to 8 p.m. Paradigm Gallery also has their gallery openings that night. It is party. Sometimes we have workshops where you can kind of do a make and take with one of the members, and that is all member driven. So some months there's nothing going on and it's just us chit chatting, and other months it's going to be like an inky wild party. So the best way to find out if something is happening at the print shop during First Friday is to either follow us on Instagram at BYO Print or to subscribe to our newsletter. But the Instagram is probably going to be, it's the easiest to update. So that's the best place to check. You can also email us. Our email is easily accessible online at byoprint.org or on the Instagram. Those emails come right to me, so I answer every single one. And the other time is we're running a pilot this year as part of our like 15th anniversary. So we're open on the second Sunday of the month from 12 to 5. Which is this Sunday, the 14th, I believe, from 12 to 5. And you can come in if you've gone to the gallery. You can continue upstairs and visit us. And that's a good time to like ask us membership questions. Or if you're a printmaker, you can drop in and do some printing during those hours.
Awesome.
But you have to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
We're not tutors.
Don't come with not. I can't just get like wedding invitations done from 12 to 5.
And so we're not a commercial shop in any way, but we do get a lot of inquiries like that. Like, can you print t-shirts for us? Can you print invitations? And when those kinds of things come to us, we try to expand the network and send them recommendations of other like small businesses in the city that are better suited for those things. So we're really about lifting everybody up.
If
there's a member who is interested does in that it, kind of freelance work, then of course we'll send that over to them.
Excellent.
It's really our whole goal is to support the members in their own practices.
I think we should probably talk about that a little bit, is that all of our members are independent artists. Like, we all use the shop together and we are collaborative, but the main goal of the shop is our own personal practice. And so I think Katie has been so great at supporting artists in their like personal career endeavors, and like we have this space and you can use it to your fullest, and we support and promote, and every now and then we collaborate. And I think some of the relationships that have grown out of, you know, just being in the shop, working side by side on independent projects and like learning from each other is really what makes the shop so special. It's like I've known some members for you know,
over a decade.
Over a decade. Yeah. And it's like, oh, I really love when you are working on this thing. Can you show me? Mm-hmm. Or like, oh, I'm really struggling with this part of my print. I mean, we have...
Yeah, we do color consultations with each other all the time. Oh, I love that.
Yeah, so it's like definitely driven by the independent artist, but then we're all there, you know, so...
Sometimes, yeah, we get requests from the public to like run a workshop or whatnot. And that's how you all found us working. We were prepping for an event for Moore College of Art for their alumni reunion. But Lisa's right, like the majority of the time, we're all working on our own things. And that idea of like lifting each other up and the voices of the members being greater than the voice of the print shop entity was always really important to me. So like BYO Print or BYO Printmaking Collaborative, which is our full name, like that's always, it's always been intentional that the entity takes the backseat to the artist who's working inside of the space.
Incredible. Yeah. That's great. Well, thank you so much, guys. This was amazing. We're going to close out.
I hope you got to learn a little bit
yes,
about
we did. It was so many great things. We're going to close out with some rapid-fire questions for you. Could you describe the Philly art scene in one word?
Just like Philadelphia, big and small. No, that's not one word.
joyous? There's a lot of joy in the Philly art scene.
Cheesesteaks, with whiz or without?
I haven't had a cheesesteak in over 20 years, so I would much prefer a tofu banh mi.
Ooh, lovely. Okay.
I had to think about that.
That's
one.
Good.
Because I knew it was coming.
without.
Your favorite Philadelphia neighborhood?
I'm growing obsessed with Old City right now. We just moved there, so I have all these like new feelings.
Yes.
But we spent so long in Old Kensington.
I mean, I lived in Fishtown for over 15 years, beginning in 2006. So, really, that's where my heart is, and that's where I became a grown-up, you know?
Yeah.
So it always has a place in my heart, although it doesn't always feel right now.
Yeah.
So, same with Lisa. I'm learning to love Old City
we're
again.
We're just loving the new neighborhood vibes that
we're feeling.
We're feeling. It's like, it's like I'm in a whole different city. It's like,
Favorite Philadelphia-based artist people are sleeping on?
Okay, so I know these are rapid-fire questions, but whatever.
Fine.
We can't help ourselves.
So my statement on that is we hope that people that are coming to the arts community to see art don't sleep on buying artwork through artist-run spaces versus like a commercial gallery if they have the opportunity to directly support
on
artists.
Really that's amazing best. Art that's affordable, available, locally created. You're sleeping on it.
There's thousands of artists in Philadelphia who are amazing.
That have social media now to reach a larger audience that had been maybe gatekept before, and now you can go directly to that artist and either look for a commission or look for their art and then access them directly.
That's true. That said, if you are interested in work from an artist who is working with a gallery, always go to that gallery, because otherwise you're gonna mess up that relationship.
I was gonna say we really love Paradigm Arts, not just because we live there now, but you know, we've been friends with them for such a long time, and they always bring such incredible art to the public with their shows. And so if you're ever like, I don't know where to go on First Friday, start at Paradigm. There's always going to be a really fabulous show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as someone who has we've both shown our work there many times and over many years, they work really hard and are very genuine with their artists and their relationship with artists and eagerness to bring art into everyday people's homes.
If you could have any artist in history produce a portrait of you, who would it be?
I want Hieronymus Bosch to do mine.
I feel like I totally could have predicted that.
Oh yes, I'm easy in that.
Ooh, Frida Kahlo.
That's a good one.
Very nice. Very nice.
I love that.
And finally, your favorite beverage of the moment.
I always find joy in the chai from the Random Tea Room. I don't have it that much anymore because I'm just not there as often, but it is I think hands down, like my favorite hot drink of all time.
I like really, really spicy ginger beer.
Ooh.
Like hurts a little.
Oh, well, good. Okay.
The chai at the Random Tea Room is also really spicy. So good.
Good little spicy drink.
Lisa and Katie, thank you so much for your time today. And everyone, please check out BYO Print in Old City. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Robert, can you imagine moving all of that printing equipment as many times as they did?
No, I would have given up. I would have passed out on the stairs, and I would have just left it there.
Free printing press?
Or at least pieces of it.
Have you ever walked up to the fifth floor of Paradigm Gallery where BYO Print is?
No, I've never ventured up that much.
Walk up one story at a time and then check out each level of the gallery, especially in the summer, because it gets so hot. And one time I just went all the way to the top and I had the worst glow.
We got a lot of things for people to do this weekend.
Yes. Can I start? Starting with
tomorrow.
Our podcast, Philly Has Heart, is teaming up with the Bridget Meyer Gallery for an artist talk and gallery tour of the DC-based artist Alan Bentley's exhibition titled Flight. 6 p.m. It's at 7th in Walnut. The drinks are on us. The paintings are on you. The Bind Your Own Book Workshop at Brooklinier Fine Art Gallery is on Friday. Saturday is the Philadelphia Fall Arts Fest at the Kimmel Center. It is free, and it starts at 11 a.m. Now, I don't know if this is the same thing I walked past last year, and I saw a bajillion of children funneling out into the streets in costumes, but keep it in mind. I think this is going to be something good for the kids.
Nice. Okay.
Robert, I believe you have something you want to tell us for September
13th. September 13th, Mural Arts Fest is hosting their annual festival from 2 to 7 at the Oval on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. The rain date, should you need it, I don't think so, though. I think it's just supposed to be nice, is going to be September 14th from 2 to 7. Mural Arts Fest at the Oval is free day of art, music, and activities with a sneak peek at October's Mural Arts Month.
New Heaven, New Earth, the second and last Fringe Fest stage read is on September 16th at 8 p.m. To Know Blue as Blue by Scott Vidalis, who was put on our radar by Brooklinier. His opening reception is at the 5U space in the Callow Hill area on September 20th. Do you want to hammer home something about?
Yes, I do. On September 20th, there is also Chaos and Kisses, a grand opening parade for Calder Gardens. And then everyone can actually get in to Calder Gardens on September 21st.
What do we have on the 24th, Robert?
Oh, right. Our annual Young Friend Happy Hour is going to be at the Kimmel Center for all performing arts organizations of the city. So find yourself in the lobby of the Kimmel Center on September 24th for this amazing event where there's usually some performances as well as some insights into the new programs people are expecting to see this season at the Performing Arts of Philadelphia.
Robert, what is on October 11th?
We're super excited for October 11th. Join the Philadelphia Ballet as they celebrate the launch of their 2025 season for opening weekend gala. This year will feature a double bill of Carmen and Bolero, followed by a reception and gala at the Bellevue. Grab your tickets today. You can do so by going to pbgala2025.givesmart.com.
I'll also link that in the show notes.
As always, Philly has heart.